Hey guys, we return to our fieldwork mini-series today. This is episode 4, and I can't wait to share this episode with you guys. We have Maya and Rochelle returning to the show, and being that they are halfway done with their level 2 fieldwork experience at this point, we chat about a lot of different things, including how their midterm evaluations went, what the process of going through the midterm looked like for them. And then we also take some time to reflect about the first half of their fieldwork so far. There are only 2 more episodes to go in this fieldwork mini-series. And if you haven't checked out any of our previous episodes with the fieldwork students so far, definitely go back and listen to episode 4, 6, and 8 and hear a little bit about what the students have been going through and what they've been dealing with up until this point. Hope you enjoy today.
If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah. Welcome to OT for Life.
So we are here once again, and today's a big day. Today, our theme is actually going to be that it is the midterm, or I should say after the midterm. The students are now halfway done with their first level 2 fieldwork, and it's super exciting. And yeah, let's start off like kind of where you guys are at. How are you guys doing today? I'll go to you, Rochelle.
Hi, I'm doing pretty well. I'm really excited to be halfway done. I feel like kind of making progress, a little kind of over the hump. But yeah, lots to talk about today.
Same. Yeah. I feel amazing being halfway done. I feel like sometimes I look back and I'm like, look how far I've come. So it feels good.
Yeah, I think, I don't think it made on the recording last time, but right at the end of our little chat, I remember saying, you guys are talking like therapists now. Like, the way that you guys were talking, the phrases that you were saying, it was such a change from, you know, just a couple weeks ago, and I was like, oh my gosh, you guys are therapists, so great. So why don't we just start and really kind of shed some light on what the midterm actually looks like, how you guys prepared for it, and what it looks like when you're with your supervisor going through the midterm. And maybe if one of you guys wants to kind of explain, you know, the AOTA midterm eval, you know, just kind of give a brief rundown on that as well.
Sure. So the AOTA midterm, you get scored on a scale from 1 to 4. 1 is kind of what you don't want to have. That indicates that there's problems. 2 is a needs improvement. That's a pretty realistic rating at the midterm. 3 is meeting expectations, which they say is pretty realistic at the final and kind of rarely given at midterm. And then a 4 would be that you're excelling and that you're kind of in that top 5% of students that an instructor has had. And so at the midterm, you need, you know, so many points to be considered passing. And at the final, you need, you know, so many more points. And it kind of goes through different categories of AOTA ethics and communication and how much you can, or how confident you are in describing, you know, what occupational therapy is to the patients, to your caregivers, spouses. I think another one is professionalism. So just kind of different aspects of being a therapist. And so you get graded on that. And so at halfway, you kind of get to see where you are, where you stand, and what you need to work on for the remaining 6 weeks.
So yeah, there's 7 different sections and a total of 42 different questions that have to be completed. And I actually wanted to backtrack just a split second here and explain when we're saying AOTA, that's actually the American Occupational Therapy Association, just in case anybody is listening that is not from the United States, that when we're talking about the midterm, it's something that is delegated from our national association that all, you know, master's level students have to go through as part of their level 2 fieldwork. Mm-hmm. And so I know this is kind of, it can be a stressful time, you know, kind of a anxiety and, you know, what if, like, what's going to happen? And, you know, for you guys, now that you've just gone through it, I'd love to kind of just take a step back and really kind of dive in and discuss kind of the things that
happened, what your mindset was, and then what it actually looked like that day when you sat down with your supervisor.
Yeah, so I had a cancellation that day. So we had an hour, or actually maybe 45 minutes free. So we sat down and we talked about it. I was very nervous.
So it was planned.
It was planned. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So we had the planned time and it was set in our schedule. And we sat down and we talked about it. And she, you know, told me what I needed to work on and what was going well at the time. And so I think I was a little bit more nervous than I should have been because I don't think it was that bad. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's what it looked like for us.
Okay. Did your supervisor ask you to kind of reflect on things prior to the meeting? Like, was there anything that she asked of you, or is it more like just kind of show up and I'm going to tell you how you're doing?
Yeah, it was just show up and I'll tell you how you're doing.
So mm-hmm. I can see that being a little bit more invoking kind of anxiety.
Yes.
Like, I'm not really sure what I'm walking into.
Right.
And especially if you haven't been getting a lot of feedback previously
right.
or anything like that, you're kind of like, okay, here I am. I'm going to put myself out there.
Yeah.
Give it to me nicely, hopefully.
Yeah.
Definitely. Mine looked a little bit different. So before I did the midterm eval, we also had time scheduled during the day. We set aside one session where we normally would have had a treatment session. Mm-hmm. So we set aside 45 minutes on Friday to talk about it. And my supervisor asked me to kind of go through the list and rate myself. So circle the numbers and kind of make comments about where I thought I was. And then we went over it together. It was pretty relaxed. I wasn't really that nervous. I think I was more nervous for my treatment sessions that day because I had six. And so that was really on my mind. The midterm eval wasn't really on my mind, but I kind of knew what to expect. I mean, we do weekly feedback every week where I can see my strengths and areas of growth. And a lot of my areas of strength were kind of some of those categories on the midterm evaluation, such as communication or professional behavior. I knew that my interventions might not get as strong of ratings, but I knew that she already thought that my communication and professional behaviors were good, so I wasn't too worried about the midterm eval. Also, the midterm eval isn't counted for any points, mm-hmm. and basically your whole grade is just the final. So I thought, even if I'm a little on the low end, I at least know where I can, that I can work on to pass at the end. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't super that nervous, really.
Yeah, I think the big thing for the midterm, and probably one of the main reasons that they do have it, is really to identify problem areas, mm-hmm. and also just to identify other areas that students need continued growth in. Mm-hmm. You know, at midterm, you're not expected to be perfect, but really kind of being able to say, like, hey, I think you're doing well in these areas, but these are other areas that, yes, like, we need to continue to work on together, mm-hmm. and all of that. And if you do come across or come out with a non-passing grade at midterm, I believe you're actually the supervisor, the site should contact the school and say, like, hey, they're not passing. Let's put some strategies in place. Let's discuss mm-hmm. this. So it's not a, you know, they're going to get to the end and automatically fail. It's like, hey, you're here right now. You need to get to this level mm-hmm. in the next 6 weeks mm-hmm. or potentially even a couple of long, you know, maybe the next 8 weeks mm-hmm. if they have to prolong it or something like that. So really using it as a means to say, this is where you're at, and this is where you need to mm-hmm. get to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm gonna throw it out there. Was there anything that came up in the meeting that was not expected that you guys would care to share? Or something that kind of caught you off guard that was like, oh, I do that well? Oh, okay, great. You know, I wasn't expecting that. Or like, ooh, yeah, that's probably something I should work on.
For me, I thought everything that I rated myself at, I mean, I also rated myself conservatively. I didn't give myself many of the threes, but I thought that I was a little bit surprised that I got a little bit better of a rating than I had anticipated. And that was kind of surprising to me. I didn't think that I would do as well as I thought I was going to do. I don't know. So I was a little bit surprised by that, but pretty much all the comments were pretty similar. I thought me and my supervisor were pretty much on the same page, which I thought was really kind of reassuring mm-hmm. that I was thinking the same thing she was. And so that's nice just to be able to anticipate what I need to work on and just having those things in mind. So I thought we were kind of on the same page. So I wasn't really surprised other than she kind of gave me higher ratings in a couple areas I didn't expect.
Yeah, that's great. For me, we meet once a week for an hour. So and we have like a weekly reflection that I do and then she does as well. So I feel like I know I already knew my standings, and she tells me like what my strengths are every week and what my areas of growth are. So I kind of figured like, okay, this is what it's going to be. So mm-hmm. I don't think there was anything that caught me off guard.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think having the weekly reviews is really huge mm-hmm. and that everybody should have at least a weekly review. Yes. And that way nothing's a surprise at the midterm. Yeah. It's kind of things that you know that you need to kind of keep working at.
I totally agree. And that's, as you guys were talking, I'm like, I know that both of you guys have those weekly mm-hmm. meetings, and that's huge because yeah. going into the midterm, it's just another weekly yeah. meeting. You know, right. you just happen to be halfway through. Yeah. But especially for somebody that maybe doesn't have weekly meetings, yeah. I think that knowing like, hey, you could advocate for yourself. We were talking about this the last time of like, if they get to the midterm and all of a sudden their supervisor is giving them all this feedback that they're like, wait a second. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard any of this before. Maybe that's something that they could ask their supervisor, like, can we meet once a week or even, you know, every other week or mm-hmm. something like that? So, you know, we can have a little bit more feedback. We can have more discussions mm-hmm. on the topic. Because I love the fact that, you know, it feels like both of you guys went into this pretty comfortable, you know, yeah. I'm sure yeah. it was a little stressful, but like for the most part, pretty comfortable and confident of like where you were mm-hmm. based on the feedback that you had already received.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys feel like using the midterm, or do you feel like you needed to use the midterm to give more feedback for yourself for advocating and talking to your supervisor about how things are going?
No, I feel like we have like an open communication and we talk pretty much all the time or whenever we have time. If there's like cancellation or if somebody's late, she lets me know, you know, what's going well or what I just did well or what could have improved. Like, for example, I actually got videotaped for the first time this past week. And so we had some free time. So she was like, let's just go over the video right now. So we watched the video and she paused it every few minutes and would say, you know, look, do you see what you just said? And look at his reaction, you know, like, so just giving me like feedback of things that I didn't see and you typically won't see like on the spot. But looking back, I was able to like note and really have concrete, like, okay, say this, don't say that. Like, and she actually wants me to write down some cues for this particular kid. Like, what should you say to him to help him out? What shouldn't you say? So we talk all the time now. So
I think I have a little bit different of an answer. I think that the midterm helped me to be able to, because we went through all the categories in our weekly meetings, we kind of just go through whatever is kind of a standout more so. So you get to see what the strengths are, the areas of growth are, but you don't really get to talk about those things in the middle just because they aren't really a standout enough to put in one category or the next. So I thought it was nice to be able to go over kind of all aspects and get feedback on those things that were kind of in the middle that, you know, obviously you can still improve on, but that was nice to do,
mm-hmm.
to be able to see those kind of middle ground areas that I could still be working on.
Yeah, I think too, coming from being a supervisor, sitting down at midterm, and this kind of piggybacks onto what you were saying, like a lot of times you're very focused on the clinical skills, the treatments, the evaluations, you know, all these things that the students have to learn and that the supervisor has to help facilitate. But then there's all these other things like the potentially like funding sources and talking about maybe some of the back end stuff of OT work
mm-hmm.
that might not have come up yet. Sometimes it will, but sometimes it might not. And then it's like, oh yeah, like that's something that we're going to have to continue to work on in the next 6 weeks as a supervisor. I need to make sure that I continue to expose my students to those types mm-hmm. of things too. And I think that also just kind of helps guide the experience to where it needs to be mm-hmm. within those mm-hmm. 12 weeks. So I know for me, it definitely helps to, you know, go through that and be like, oh yeah, we haven't done as many of this. So I'm going to really try to include more of that in the next 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So Maya, you had just mentioned that you get videotaped for your sessions and you've had just one so far?
Just one so far.
Okay. Yeah. I'd love to hear a little bit more about what that looks like
yeah.
and the impact that it's had on you so far, because not every site does it. And I think it's pretty unique.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, tell us what's going on with that.
Yeah. So I actually didn't know that it was going to happen that day. I was with the kid and we were doing some like tabletop activities and my supervisor stepped out. And when she came back, she had a video recorder. And so It definitely did catch me off guard and I kind of sat up a little bit and kind of changed my demeanor. It was it was difficult, and I feel like it's hard to be, like, natural and organic when you know that you're being, like, videotaped. Uh-huh. But I feel like it worked out. There was some behaviors that were occurring with the child, and I was trying not to be, I don't know, it was very hard because I was trying to really, it made me really aware of everything that I was saying. And that's difficult because sometimes you want to just, like, have fun and, like, kind of be a little wild with the kid, and but I kind of, like, tried to be more reserved. And when we watched the tape, it actually was only maybe for 15 minutes. It wasn't the whole session. Okay. Yeah. Which was nice. So it wasn't mm-hmm. that stressful the whole time. But when we watched it back, it was really cool to see, like, what I could have done differently that potentially could have changed the direction of what was going on. Because there were some behaviors that were occurring in the session. And
before she started the video
after the videotaping.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And he noticed the videotaping, but I don't think that's where the behaviors were coming from.
Okay.
And he kind of was all over the place. He ended up on the floor and was being very silly. And so it was me trying to bring him back in. So it was a difficult time to be videotaped. Yeah.
So I think that's so interesting that you said that your supervisor just walked away and then all of a sudden came back and started videotaping you. Do you think you would have liked to have known that, like, hey, I'm going to videotape you for this kid today? Or do you actually think it was beneficial that you just kind of had to adjust because you were already in the session?
Yeah, I think it was beneficial to just adjust. If I knew beforehand, I would have been, like, very nervous, but just her coming in, I was like, okay, I'm already here with him. I'll just keep going. Yeah, so I think it's better to just kind of be on the spot with it as opposed to knowing beforehand.
Did you have a discussion with your supervisor afterwards as to why she decided to do it then? Was it she was already planning to do that? Did it just kind of happen where she's like, ooh, this is good, I'm going to go grab the video camera? Or do you think she wanted to highlight something that was going on in the session? Any idea?
Yeah, I think she wanted to highlight mm-hmm. what was going on, because with this kiddo, his behaviors are different, and they're not necessarily like tantrums or big like reactions. Mm. They're smaller reactions. So she wanted me to really see like the exact moment when, look right there, like that's probably when we lost him. And so because his reactions are kind of like small and you have to catch them, like recording him and recording what maybe I said or could have done differently that set him off, like getting those exact moments, I feel like they helped me out. So I think she kind of saw that coming, or she knew, and so she decided to take it upon herself to record.
Yeah. So going back and watching yourself, what was going through your head? Do you think that the videotaping was beneficial?
Yeah, yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, part of me at first was like, oh my God, is that how I sound? But other than that, I think it was honestly really beneficial. I think it's going to help me to go take some time and write down like what I could say to him and what I should keep inside. And I think that's going to help me out in the long run. So of course it is like nerve-wracking to have a video camera like in your face, but at the end of the day, it's for the better.
Yeah, I'll share a story that happened with me this week. Is I was working with a kiddo with one of my students, and all of a sudden the mom was with us, and then the dad comes in and is like, oh, you know, I'd really like it if one of us, when it's just one of the parents there, if we could actually record when you're telling us something. So then if the other parent isn't there, we can just play the recording rather than trying to remember and explain it to whoever wasn't there. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm totally game. And then the second the mom pressed play, when I was explaining something, I like totally froze. And so even though, she wasn't recording me, she was like recording the kid and it was just me talking. But it was the same thing where I was like, wait, I just explained this to you and now you're recording. And then I just got all nervous. And I was like, oh, this is so bad. But, you know, really valuable to like go through it and be trying to explain something to somebody who's actually not there at the time and really trying to make it like understandable. Mm-hmm. So not quite the same thing, but you know, recording, having to really kind of pay attention to what you are doing, what you're saying, what you sound like, and all of that.
Yeah.
Stuff. That's funny. Is videotaping a thing where you are, Rochelle?
No, we don't do videotaping. The only videotaping that usually occurs is when patients' caregivers might videotape the patient, and it's usually when they're walking with PT, so it's not really They don't really do it with us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more of a maybe to document their progress or document like, hey, you're doing this and you haven't done it yet or something
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's not a learning modality for the students.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And it's just for them, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's one of those things that has come up in some of the fieldwork educator seminars before, and I never had to do it as a student, and I've never used it for my students. I know we've talked about it, but yeah, I've never used it. So it's kind of one of those things I always think about. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it, you know, does it invoke too much stress for the student, or is it actually a really valuable learning opportunity?
Yeah, I think there's like pros and cons to it. I kind of do think that maybe if the video camera wasn't there, I would have been more organic and maybe those behaviors would not have occurred. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's hard to tell. Yeah.
Have you seen the kid since?
This was this past Wednesday.
So okay. No. Okay. I'll be curious to know how the next session that you see the kiddo, now that you've like watched yourself and had some time to process it, mm-hmm. if you're going to start to pick up on those things or anything like that.
Okay, I'll let you know. Yeah.
We'll touch back on that. Okay. But let's do a little kind of reflection on the past 6 weeks and like how things are going and just kind of where you guys are in terms of that, where you feel like you've made the biggest gains in and maybe the areas that you feel like you still need to improve upon.
I feel like I've made the biggest gains in being more comfortable during the session. The first couple of weeks, I actually was like dripping sweat, like so nervous throughout the session. But now I'm realizing like I'm more calm and I'm able to like redirect the kiddos without thinking to myself, oh my God, I have this thing set up and they're not doing that. And it doesn't seem like it seems like they're kind of all over the place now. I feel like I'm more able to kind of go with the flow and not be so like uptight and rigid about like my schedule and what I have, the things that I have to hit. So I think that helps me to be more at ease. And maybe that's why I'm not sweating so much, because I'm just being flexible. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you feel like you've really kind of been able to start integrating a lot more things, where when you first start, you're like, I'm looking at the kid, I'm looking at fine motor, I'm looking at gross motor, I'm looking at behavior, I'm looking at attention, I'm looking at sensory. And all of a sudden now you're like, I know I'm looking at all of that, but right now I'm really focusing on, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's kind of a going from looking at everything to then being able to really filter it down?
Yeah, as well? I do actually. I think before, one thing that was hard for me was like writing my notes, because I wasn't picking up on what was actually happening at that moment. I was thinking about like, oh my God, did I set up the craft activity over there? So I had so much on my mind that I wasn't actually looking at like, how are they actually performing in this activity right now? Mm-hmm. So then when I would go back and write my notes, I would kind of think to myself, like, I do not necessarily remember. Like, so I think now it's easier to kind of focus on what's happening at that moment. Mm-hmm. And because my mind is more at ease.
Yeah. What do you think, Rochelle? Things that are going well, things that you feel like you've really made some nice progress on.
Some things that have been going well and I'm making progress on are kind of more some of those technical skills. I think I've kind of touched on that before, but doing muscle testing each week, we've been adding different kind of skills that I've been trying to work on and trying to work with different patients outside of their treatment sessions, maybe when my supervisor is treating. So getting to kind of work on technical skills or taking blood pressure, also transferring people, getting more comfortable with knowing how each patient transfers, because they're all very different. And yeah, kind of like more of those technical skills. And then also I think that I've been getting better at knowing how much time things will take for certain patients as I get to know them a little bit better. So I still like to over prepare, but I'm never stuck with nothing. Like it doesn't happen where I get through everything and then, oh no, I have 15 more minutes, but I don't know what to do. So I've kind of gotten a sense of how long things will take for certain people. And then I think also kind of like what Maya was saying, knowing what to look for to be able to write a note later. So I think that gets a little bit easier, looking for how many degrees do they go through their active range of motion versus just doing it and then trying to remember later, oh no, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was so focused on, like she said, setting up for the next thing or what will we do next, or oh, how will I help cue them to not use compensatory movements when I want them to do something else. So I think that's gotten a little bit easier. And then I think areas of growth are kind of incorporating more occupations into people's treatment sessions. So I've kind of gotten to start doing that a little bit more, but I definitely think that's something I could always kind of keep working on. Mm-hmm. Is getting to incorporate different occupations that people want to be able to do again.
Yeah, I feel like that is definitely, I'll use the word harder or maybe more of a challenge in different settings. And what specifically comes to mind would be like hand therapy. And I've heard it a bunch of times where, you know, people are like, but hand therapy is not very occupation based. You know, you go in, you use the putty, you use the like resistive grippers and you do some stretches and like, where's the occupation in that? And even when I was a student, I did a rotation in hand therapy and I remember a client coming in and being like, wow, this just looks like I'm a big kid playing with Play-Doh, you know? And I was like, whoa, okay, hold on, you know? And I really tried to, at that moment, like, take a step back and be like, we want to get back to your occupation. Like, we're doing this for our strength and range of motion, but what are your actual occupations? And so I think that that is definitely a challenge in some of these, and in some practice areas, and really trying to make it occupation based. Do you feel like maybe the model tends to be a little bit more biomechanical or like rehab based and less having to do with occupation? Or do you feel like that's just your learning curve of learning how to bring the occupation into it?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that depending, I mean, I've said it before, some our patients, their ages range, you know, from 20 to 90, and their diagnoses are very, neurodiagnoses that are very different from one another. So there's this kind of rehab process, but then everybody's so different and is trying to do, or they're all trying to do different things that it's kind of hard to bring in these occupations for such a diverse population of people. So I think it's a little bit of both.
Okay. And I feel like especially it would be easy if it's an occupation that you yourself are familiar with.
Right.
It's like, oh, I already know everything that, you know, or 90% of that, that activity. But especially when it's something that you've never done, maybe something you've never heard of before, or you've had no exposure to. Now all of a sudden you have to learn the activity, digest the activity yourself, and then apply it to the population or the client that you're working with.
Yeah, one specific example of that would be shaving your face. I've had multiple men come in and they tell me that's what they want to do. And I mean, I don't shave my face. So, you know, it's kind of a matter of watching someone do it or trying to think about what would be involved or kind of simulate it on myself and kind of figure out what movements are involved. It's something I've never done or had to do or probably will never have to do. But that's just one good example, you know, of something that I don't do every day. So it's not like second nature to me. I have to kind of do an activity analysis and then go into it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I don't even know where to go with that. So
yeah,
that would be one. But like, I mean, and that would be very kind of gender specific. But even if it has nothing to do with gender, and it's just something that's completely outside of what you're exposed to.
Right, exactly. That's just one example.
Yeah.
And then you're supposed to be kind of the expert and the one helping them. So you have to learn it and then kind of feel really confident with it to be able to answer questions or to be able to help somebody with different strategies before you get into a treatment session with them. So it's kind of a lot of planning involved.
Yeah. Have you reached out to, I mean, specifically with this, like shaving, did you reach out to any men in your life and be like, hey, like, talk me through this occupation like, that I can understand? Like, not the clients,
right?
But like in a personal realm.
Right, yeah.
And whether or not it's, you know, we're talking about shaving here, but like maybe it's woodworking, you know? I know very, very little about woodworking, but my father does a ton. He's built a boat and he's done all this stuff. So I can imagine that if I was working somewhere and somebody wanted to get back into woodworking, I would go straight to my dad and be like, all right, like show me the gist of this so I can understand it.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I would watch my boyfriend shave for a little bit. I would ask him, okay, can you pretend like you're shaving? What are you doing? How's your arm moving? Okay. Okay, now the other side. Okay, now your sideburns. Okay, I see it now. And then kind of doing a little activity analysis while he's doing it. So kind of getting to see how somebody who naturally does it and does it often versus me trying to simulate it on myself. Yeah. So, yeah.
Did you, I'm curious what your boyfriend's take of you watching him do this. Like, did you actually draw attention to things that maybe he hadn't thought of before? Like, he's just used to it and it's like, oh wait, now I'm switching hands or I'm, you know, going here. I'm moving my face in a different way.
Uh-huh. I think it kind of just brought a little bit of realization to him kind of, oh, I don't really think about doing this, you know? And so he was, I guess, probably a little bit more conscious of that fact and kind of thinking about, oh, wow, this is something I do and kind of take for granted.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of interesting that, you know what I mean, that you're working with somebody to be able to do this again. So I think it kind of brought his attention to it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So much learning.
Happening. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep.
And just, you know, something as, I want to say simple. It's not simple, but something as...
Everyday.
Yeah. As shaving, right. You know, or eating, or bathing, yeah. Or, like, you know, the activities of daily living,
right.
Know, ADLs, all of that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Very, very fascinating. Maya, I know you had mentioned, as we were discussing previously, something that you feel like you needed kind of continued growth, continued progress on.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us what's going on here?
Note writing.
Okay.
Is taking me a long time. So typically it takes me to write one note, takes me about 30 minutes to 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And with some of the other students at my site, they're saying it takes them close to the same time. Yeah. And it's really time consuming and it's not fun. And I'm still getting edits back on them. So it is hard to spend that much time and then for it to not be perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and we'll share some numbers here because I think this is, for me, like this really is how like my brain operates.
Mm-hmm.
But you were saying that in potentially a day and a half, you have around 9 notes
yeah.
to write.
Yeah.
And 30 to 45 minutes. When we do the math on that, we're looking at an additional 6 to 7 hours
yeah.
just for documentation time.
Yeah.
Just for a day and a half of work.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just not feasible unless yeah. you are going home and you're working, you know, for an extra.
No. So I usually spend my lunch writing notes. That's if I have a client like in the morning mm-hmm. or if there's a cancellation or if a kid is late, then I spend like all of my downtime writing notes. But there's some times where like my last few kiddos are at the very end of the day. So I have no choice but to go home and spend like additional mm-hmm. hours
mm-hmm.
writing notes at home.
And that's really tough because when it is at the end of the day, if you don't do it by the start of the next mm-hmm. day, then all of a sudden it compounds
yes.
and then you have more and
yes.
more.
Mm-hmm.
And then more has happened, so
yes.
then you forget what's happened in previous sessions. And
mm-hmm.
it's kind of this vicious cycle that just
yes.
mm-hmm. keeps building and growing.
Yeah.
And trust me, I know. I definitely have some notes that I'm sitting on that I haven't completed yet. And so this is not just a student process or a student learning opportunity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know plenty of other supervisors and other therapists that documentation and finding time to document
yeah.
is mm-hmm. one of the hardest things.
And I am finding that with documentation, I don't know if this is just something that like OTs run into, but it is hard for me because I just sometimes want to just have fun with the kids. And I feel like it kind of takes away from some of the fun that I'm having in field work because there's so much documentation and I don't think it's one of the more fun parts of OT. I definitely
yeah.
think it's...
Yeah, no.
It's important.
Yeah, it's important.
It's important. But yeah, I mean, specifically when it comes to like kind of site-specific documentation, because
yeah.
I've heard like mental health has crazy amounts of documentation. I mean,
wow.
pages and pages
wow.
per treatment session and all this kind of stuff. You know, I'm sure some sites are much more and some are a little checkbox,
yeah.
you know, or a couple checkboxes and a sentence or two, and then you send it on its
yeah.
way. So have you come up with any... you don't have to say like what we've already said,
mm-hmm.
but have you come up with any strategies that have helped you overcome some of these writing documentation and trying to cut down on the time? Anything that you found that's worked or maybe that you've tried that hasn't worked?
I think trying to write down like specifics, like, okay, I gave 2 to 3 visual demonstrations for this activity, or they demonstrated scapular winging for this activity. So like trying to write down like specifics, because everything else is kind of just like, you know, therapist provided this activity to address so-and-so, but the like specifics are kind of what I'm having difficulties. So trying to write those things down and remember those so that later on I can kind of plug them in. So I guess like doing it over time, as opposed to just sitting down and saying, okay, write this whole half a page note right now. Mm-hmm. So that helps a little bit.
Are you doing that during the session? Like if you see something, you're kind of like jot it down if it's an appropriate time, or like right at the end, you take a minute or two and just jot down everything that you can remember?
Sometimes both. Okay. Yeah, depending on what's going on, or maybe if the parent's there and the parent starts talking and then there's kind of a second to write some things down. But other than that, usually right at the end.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it may still be taking the same amount of time, but I may be breaking it up a little bit.
And kind of using it when it's fresh in your mind.
Yeah.
Like the kid's still in front of you. You can still picture everything that's happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just taking that time to jot it down and then really formulate it later.
Yeah. Because once there are like two kids, then, and if I have done like a similar activity or something that's like prone, then I'm like, oh, wait, which one did this and which one didn't? So I need to know on the spot. It's hard for me to go back and go through the whole day.
Yeah, I kind of do something similar. I think that my documentation time is a little bit less just because I spend more time in the planning stages of it. So the web kind of interface that we use, you're allowed to create daily notes before you see them. So I kind of try to do that on the weekend. I'll create a daily note for each person and the date that I'll see them. And then I'll put in my objective section my plans for the session. And so then when I come every morning with my plans typed up to review with my supervisor before I do the treatment sessions for the day. And so I have it all written down what I'm going to do. And then what I do like during the session, maybe while somebody's taking a rest break or doing something that they don't need my hands on them, I'll write down, you know, how many degrees they got through or how many times or how much assist I gave them or kind of what kind of muscle contraction or whatever they were doing. And then that way I have it all in the objectives, and then I can copy and paste to my assessment, and then I just assess each component of what they did. So I think that that kind of has cut down a little bit of time. And then also I like to look back at previous notes that my supervisor has written and look and see what elements she was looking for in her notes, and then kind of try to recreate that or address those elements that I noticed that she was looking for in the past. So I kind of try to do that, and I think that's helped me a little bit. So maybe that would be a good strategy, looking back at your supervisor's notes.
Thank you.
I love that. I think that's great of, you know, really trying to use the previous notes as a template, you know, and then just tweaking it based on the activity, based on maybe how the kid was that day, the behavior, rather than really reinventing the wheel for every single note that you're doing, utilizing notes that have been done and then just making it appropriate for what you did. I'm trying to think, and being that I'm also in pediatrics, I'm trying to apply your other strategy, Rochelle, about kind of having a pre-plan already populated. Because I know so many times I'll go in with a plan and I do absolutely nothing in regards to that plan because of something else that's happened in the session. You know, the kid's extremely sleepy and I can't get them to where they need to be that day. So I have all these other smaller goals that I'm trying to address. And so I'm curious of the actual way to integrate. I mean, can it happen between an adult setting and a pediatric setting, or, you know, anything like that?
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you feel about that strategy?
I feel like that might help if I kind of just like write up like a template and the things that I plan on addressing and the things that I've seen like my supervisor, like from her previous notes address, and maybe like type that up and then kind of like plug in, well, what happened today? I think that might be plausible actually, because with a lot of my kids, they, even though there might be a lot of energy or maybe a little bit of behaviors, I still typically get to like the activities that I can.
Yeah, I think that's also a kind of a positive of working with adults, is you usually don't have a refusal or temper tantrum kind of behaviors. I mean, sometimes people come in and they say, oh, I'm not feeling well, or oh, I'm feeling really tired, or your plans kind of get derailed if you can't, you want to do things on the mat and they're, for whatever reason, can't get on the mat today. Yeah. So sometimes those kind of plans do get a little shifted, but it's not so much that you have to completely change everything you're going to do. I mean, you do have to be flexible and do things a little different, but it's not kind of to that level.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just one of those, I don't know if it's a barrier or just a difference between the practice areas. And I'm sure even with my practice area of early intervention compared to like a school-based session or, you know, some other pediatric setting, it might be even harder in one versus the other.
And even working with adults, sometimes they do kind of get off track. That's one thing about working with adults is sometimes people really just want to talk. Sometimes people are living in like long-term care facilities and they don't really get to get out much except for coming to therapy, or maybe they want to go back to school, or they're working from home. They live with their parents. They don't really get to see or interact with many other people. So coming to therapy and coming to occupational therapy is kind of like a social time for them. So that's kind of a difference. It's not like that you have to deal with that kind of behavior, but you're kind of dealing more so with people wanting to talk and get off topic, and you kind of and having to refocus them to, you know, get to be able to move and, you know, make progress towards their goals.
And like what's appropriate to know, to understand them, to help with their occupations, to understand their life.
Right.
But then what is also kind of a deterrent that takes them off the track of, you know, focusing on whatever
it is. Making progress. They need to, exactly.
Moving their arm when all they want to do is just keep chatting or something like that. One other thing that I was going to mention in terms of the documentation and something that might help cut down is actually even like writing down like different word banks of words that you would typically be using to describe your activities, to describe the level of assistance, to describe anything else that you would notice in that session. So rather than, you know, utilizing all this brain power to be like, oh my gosh, what is that called again? I can't remember. What was this? Like, you already have a little word bank that you can just scan through and be like, yep, that's it. Okay, that one. And almost like, almost like a little math problem where it's like this plus this plus this equals that. And then you have your sentence there. And really just utilizing your brain power for the important stuff rather than formulating the perfect sentence and help that way.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll try it. I like that.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to come back and see how all this is going within the next couple weeks.
Okay.
So I know a lot of kind of what we've been focusing on majority for over the past couple meetings that we've had has really been talking about some of the clinical skills and how we're developing treatment ideas and treatment plans and documentation and all of this kind of stuff. But I feel one of the other really important aspects in learning to be an OT is kind of these non-clinical roles that you have to learn. And a lot of times these are things that are not taught in your program, you know, in school. And so I'd love to know, what are some other non-clinical roles that you guys are either being exposed to, you're expected to be doing already, or potentially might be getting exposed to maybe in the next couple weeks?
So I am in an outpatient facility, and so we take a lot of different insurances or payment methods. So kind of looking at the billing and knowing about what different insurances require in terms of number of visits that you have, prescriptions ending, sending prescriptions to doctors, or asking the front desk to fax them, and then having to follow up and see if it was indeed signed. Also working with patients that are that have Medicare, and knowing this the rules of Medicare, and when does somebody need to have a progress note? When is somebody about to meet their Medicare cap? Can we go beyond the Medicare cap? How do we justify services? Do we need to give them a progress note? Should we discharge them? All sorts of things like that. There's so many questions, and there's so many different ways, and all the different insurances, they all operate kind of differently. So that's one thing that's been a little bit tricky, is kind of doing that case management of knowing when somebody needs a certain note. And luckily, the system that we use, things kind of pop up in red, but sometimes the things that pop up in red are they kind of contradict one another. So having to talk to the front desk or talk to my supervisor and figure out what needs to be done mm-hmm. so that we're, you know, abiding by all these rules and not treating anyone outside of their prescription or plan of care mm-hmm. dates and stuff. So that's been quite a bit. It's quite a bit of case management. And I think, I don't know if it's just, it probably has to do with just being this outpatient clinic, but having to follow up with all sorts of prescriptions and things like that mm-hmm. as well. And kind of the productivity expectation, I suppose, is 100%. So just going through all that stuff and trying to figure out billing and everything. And then also if we have cancellations, since this there's such a high productivity expectation, doing the kind of the more case management of calling patients and saying, hey, I see that you're not on the schedule. Do you want to get on the schedule? I have an opening this day. Mm-hmm. So kind of I've kind of had to help do a lot of that stuff. So kind of OT slash case manager.
How much do you feel like all of that is on you? Or I guess maybe a better way of me phrasing that question is, how much is that yours? Or are you still going to your supervisor and she's helping you out? Or is she coming to you saying, hey, this needs to get done, and then you handle it? Like, where are you, like, where's kind of your role in that?
Yeah, and that's actually something we kind of talked about on the midterm eval too. So I've continued to ask her questions whenever I have them. And sometimes she always encourages me to ask questions about it, because sometimes, and she admits it, sometimes she doesn't know and she needs to ask the front desk mm-hmm. Because it does get complicated. Mm-hmm. And there's maybe, you know, 5 different types of insurance that they take. So it's really, it can get complicated. She doesn't always have all the answers either, but that's kind of one thing that she's been wanting me to take more initiative with in terms of calling patients and when there's downtime, figuring out who's not on the schedule and kind of taking more of like a case management role. Mm-hmm. I've been really aware of it since we've talked about it in one of our weekly meetings, about knowing when somebody needs a progress note and knowing when their prescription expires. So that was kind of some feedback she gave me on the midterm, that I'm being aware of when people need it, but mm-hmm. that, you know, kind of to keep growing with independence of that, because you never want to treat somebody outside of their mm-hmm. prescription mm-hmm. or you don't want to be late mm-hmm. with progress notes. Mm-hmm. So that can get tricky. And
does it fall on you and the therapist to make sure that, like, to follow up, I guess, that a doctor or an insurance got the progress note or got the referral from you guys? And, or is that kind of, is that taken care of with, like, the front desk? So once it's out of your hands,
we still kind of have to follow up.
Okay.
Usually the front desk is pretty good about it, but they get very busy. There's so many patients that walk through the door. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of people to worry about. So it is kind of on her to look every so often. In the system, you can look and see whose prescriptions are expiring. Okay. You can type in, or you can click on something that mm-hmm. will show you. Mm-hmm. But that'll show you whose prescriptions are expired. And you can also look, and like I said, things pop up in red, and when people are on the schedule, there's little, you know, icons that kind of pop up saying that they need a progress note.
Okay.
But it's kind of up to us to follow up and make sure that the doctor signed something. If also too, the front desk can scan it and they can send it and they can fax it to a doctor, but if the doctor hasn't signed it, mm-hmm. they probably, you know what I mean, it's easy to forget about mm-hmm.
right.
and not follow up.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So having to read,
you still have to do some of that as well.
Have to check and say, oh, can you please resend this fax, because the doctor hasn't signed it yet.
Right.
So.
Wow. I am not doing anything. The most that I'm doing outside of clinical work is like scoring assessments. I've done a few progress notes and just like scoring and like giving out caregiver questionnaires and like explaining that to the caregivers mm-hmm. and then like scoring that. So that's kind of the most that I'm doing outside of like mm-hmm. clinical work.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're not really having to do any of the scheduling
or no.
even if a kid cancels, like, hey, telling whoever makes the phone calls, like, hey, let's try to get this kid in. None of that falls on you.
No, completely on my supervisor. And even there are other people at the facility who are on top of that too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, because that's something that I make my students yeah. do it. Do you think that's something that they're going to expect you to do, or not necessarily?
I don't think so. No, not okay. necessarily. Yeah. I think because the site is so big, there's always somebody who's like, there's people at the front desk, and then there mm-hmm. like, there are actually people who work at the site who like are in charge of that and making sure that authorizations have gone through, and then making like scheduling. So
right.
I think that there are like other people who take care of those.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, and maybe it's because both of you guys are at bigger facilities,
mm-hmm.
and by bigger, I mean, I have myself at my place and a part-time therapist, and that's it, you know? So bigger doesn't even have to be that much bigger. It could be five people, but potentially there are full-on teams that are dealing with insurances. Mm-hmm. They're dealing with the billing. They're dealing with all of these other non-clinical aspects mm-hmm. of it. But from my standpoint, for my students, I'm always trying to show them everything that I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, like I try to be as open of a book as possible of like, this is what it takes to run a private practice. This is what it takes to be able to go do the work for mm-hmm. your clients, but also how are you getting the clients? Mm-hmm. You know, where are they coming from? How do we do the billing? I mean, what does it look like to run a schedule? Mm-hmm. That was something I was showing my students this past week. And I think both of them were like, holy moly, like what is going on? Like, you know, we can't put this kid here because they have nap time and this, and they only want after 3 o'clock. And I mean, it's this puzzle and there's five pieces missing and we have to somehow put it together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that that's really, really important. So I'm curious as to how other sites operate. So we're done with midterm. Mm-hmm. We've got 6-ish more weeks to go, maybe a little bit less now. If you had to give advice to other students that are about to embark on their level two, potentially their first level two fieldwork experience, knowing where you are now, knowing what you've learned, knowing everything that you've overcome to get to this point, what would you say to them?
I would say look up as many things as you can about the patient populations that you think you'll see. If you think you've looked up enough, try looking for more. Just keep looking up and keep looking for evidence-based practice articles about that just to see. Because what you learn in school is the curriculum, but there's new research that hasn't made its way into a curriculum yet. And chances are that your therapist is probably kind of staying on top of that research and they're kind of progressing into that arena. And so you might not know about things from school. So trying to kind of really stay on top of things like that, going through assessments before you get there, trying to look and see what does this assessment look like? Mm-hmm. Is there a manual where I can have like a script? Is there anybody I can practice on? You know what I'm saying? So kind of like building up your knowledge base, because when you get to the field work, you're going to be spending a lot of time trying to hone in on your documentation skills and your technical skills with working with patients. Mm-hmm. Not, you don't want to be starting from square one of building that knowledge base. Mm-hmm. So I think that really preparing that before you go in is huge.
So how did you know what to research? Or did you know what to research going into it? And if you didn't know, any strategies of how somebody could get the information of what they need to look at and then go from there?
My supervisor sent a list of things that it said, be familiar with this. And so I think kind of the words of be familiar doesn't really sound too in-depth. I don't know if that's kind of across the board. At least to me, it was kind of just a general knowledge base. I think it would have been a little bit more helpful to say, know what the pathophysiology of this, and this is, and really breaking it down and knowing all of these, and even bringing it into what are some current approaches that OTs take with this population or with whatever. I think that would have been a little bit more helpful to know how much in depth to go. But I think if you don't have that information provided to you, just looking up on the website of where you're going to be working. A lot of times places are advertising what populations they work with or what kind of things they do at their clinic. So that'd be somewhere you can find it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if your supervisor hasn't given you any sort of guidance of like, this is what to expect. I know some people might have interviews beforehand. Some people might have kind of a pre-field work meeting where they get to hear these things, but that's not everybody. You know, some people just show up the first day and it's like, okay, what's going on? And so potentially even just taking the initiative to call your fieldwork supervisor beforehand or email and say, I'd really like to, you know, start reading up on, you know, a few things. What do you think would be, what should be my focus in the next, you know, week or two before I start?
Yeah.
So potentially having to take that initiative to ask if it's not already provided
for you. I wish that I would have done that or knew that that was an option. I actually did have an interview before starting, But we mainly talked about, like, she really just wanted to know, have I worked with kids before? And, like, so we really, really didn't go in depth at all. It might have been, like, 5 or 7 minutes long. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know what to expect. I didn't find out who my supervisor was until my first day. Mm-hmm. So I had no idea what to expect. I think if I would have known what I know now, I would have maybe done, like, an activity analysis on, like, certain ADLs. Because even now when I'm writing my treatment plans, I'll write like toothbrushing, like 10 minutes. But like to actually do the toothbrushing and to know like what is lacking or what they need, or like to actually do that and teach that, and like mm-hmm. knowing like to brush an off work quadrants and like to like pronate and supinate, and like, because it's easy to just write down, do toothbrushing mm-hmm. for 10 minutes, but to actually do that, or like tying shoes or donning socks, or like knowing what the client actually needs to be able to do that. So I think I would have done like an activity analysis on all of those ADLs, because since we're in a pediatric clinic, we're ADL based. So a lot of what we do is ADLs. I would advise somebody to also maybe look up like treatment plan or like interventions, and just have maybe like a bank of different activities that you can do for this or for that, or for this or for that, that mm-hmm. might help, because I feel like every week I'm kind of starting from scratch.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting to hear you guys say these things, because part of me is like, yeah, I can see this being extremely beneficial. Mm-hmm. And then part of me is like, would you even have the right mindset to know what to look for? Now, like hindsight, you're like, yeah, like I know I'm going to be looking up activities to do with a kid that's, you know, proprioception seeking mm-hmm. or, you know, spinal cord injury or something like mm-hmm. that. But without having that lens to look at it, mm-hmm. you know, would it have actually gotten you where you need it to be? I don't know.
That's why I think it would have been helpful to reach out to my supervisor and know, like, what am I expected mm-hmm. to do? What do you think are big things that I need to have mm-hmm. a grasp on mm-hmm. before starting?
So, yeah, let's kind of wrap these things up. And at the end of the last episode, I don't think it made it onto the recording. So I kind of wanted to briefly chat about it today with you guys. You know, now that you're about halfway done and so many things have happened, so much growth has happened, where are you guys with kind of your realizing of like future aspirations? What is, you know, what is OT looking like for you? Where do you kind of see yourselves? Mm-hmm. Do you feel like your field work is solidifying that you want to go into the realm that you are currently placed, or do you feel like it's actually pushing you away? Maybe a combination of both.
I feel like my fieldwork site might be pushing me away from pediatrics. I think that I want to go into hand therapy, which is so kind of opposite of pediatrics, but it's more so solidifying that I want to work with the adult population more. It's tough.
Okay. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. honest. And yeah. you know what? At the end of the next 6 weeks, that might change back yeah. again. Mm-hmm. But I think it's always good to kind of continue having that future forward mm-hmm. and just kind of thinking mm-hmm. about it of like, what do you really see yourself doing?
Yeah.
And I mean, I've known people that they've been, you know, one side, you know, pediatrics the whole way. They finish the program, they get exposed to mental health, and they're like, yep, that's where I'm going to go. So mm-hmm. you never know.
Never know.
You never know.
I think my site has kind of done a little bit of both. I think it's kind of pushed me away a little bit, but also it's kind of pushed me away from the outpatient clinic sort of setting. So what I kind of want to do is I really want to do, if I could have a job where I could do half and half, or because I don't envision these two things ever being put together, if I could have a job where I did half early intervention, so working with kids that are, you know, 0 to 3, and then also working with patients that have had spinal cord injuries, that I think would be like the perfect mix for me. Mm-hmm. I think that I would also want to go into people's homes. When people come in to this outpatient clinic that have had spinal cord injuries, I love working with them, and I love kind of problem solving through these things that they tell me that they want to do. Mm-hmm. I think it's really awesome, and it's great when we have successes, or when they are able to learn different strategies or different things that can help them do what they want to do again. Mm-hmm. And I feel really motivated by that. But the barrier that kind of consistently comes up in this outpatient setting is people say to me, well, yeah, this is working now, but at home, my bed isn't this big, or, you know, it could, because we're on this big mat, or yeah, my bed's a lot softer than this mat. When I'm in my bed, I'm worried I'm going to fall off. Or it's harder for me to transfer onto the couch because it's a raised surface for my wheelchair versus the mat that we're transferring on goes up and down. So there's just so many things where, okay, great, we had this success, but how are you going to do this at home? Mm-hmm. How are you going to carry it over at home? That's kind of consistently the question. So if I could go into the home and do that, I think that would be perfect for me.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of a consistent thing throughout the OT field, is really the, you know, the best environment, the natural environment for whatever client population that you're working with. And for some people, like going into a clinic, going into a facility, that's exactly what they need. But for other people, you really got to get into their home. You got to get into their daily routine of what is limiting, what is making things harder for them to accomplish or to be able to successfully participate within their occupations. And so, of course, I'm going to be totally biased because I'm going into the homes and I understand the value of it. And I have worked in clinics before. And that's been one of the really big kind of detriments to it of like, we can get the kid doing beautiful things or adult, whatever it is, doing beautiful things at the clinic. But when they're at home, it kind of just falls off and they can't do whatever it is that you're trying to get to. Right. So I don't have the answer to that, but you know, yeah, I think it's, I think it's pretty interesting. And I like the honesty that you guys had for both of your answers. So I guess we'll end it here. I can't believe that we are.
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy. And again, I thank you guys. I feel like every episode is just so great. And we never quite know where we're going to go with it. And a lot of things just kind of happen and we discuss it. And I think it's just extremely valuable information. And I really do appreciate you guys being very kind of raw and open about like what's going on as you go throughout this process. Mm-hmm. And so thank you again. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And we just have a couple more of these to go. Yeah. And it's so crazy to think that we are almost at the end.
Yeah. Hey, before you go, I just wanted to say thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to further the discussion, go to our website, otforlife.com, and join our Facebook group. If you like us, here are three easy ways to let us know. 1, share our podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. 2, leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere this podcast is found. 3, subscribe to us so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. Thanks again. We'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.